This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you. Eric stepping in for Jeff Erickson this week. Another big show coming your way. We'll start by recapping what we saw last night, a dominant win for the Florida Panthers. They take a 2-1 advantage in the Stanley Cup Finals, a 6-1 win, a game that got away from Edmonton early. Talk about that. We'll hit some big baseball news. We had a major call-up in the American League yesterday. Going to play a game of Rate That Prop in the second segment. We'll take a look at some MLB props, some NBA player props for Game 3 of the NBA Finals, which, of course, comes our way tomorrow. We'll talk some fantasy football later in the show as well. Our friend Joe Bartle from rotowire.com, he's going to jump on the Progressive guest line, talk about some news, some big signings around the National Football League, his rookie running back rankings as well. And then, of course, we will finish out with Eric Halterman's best bets for a full Tuesday night slate in Major League Baseball. But Eric, I know you and I were both dialed in on the Stanley Cup final last night. Had multiple TVs fired up, Eric. I've been really dialed in on this Dale Earnhardt documentary on Amazon Prime. So luckily this game got out of hand by really the middle of the second period, was able to kind of split the attention. But bottom line is, this was a rout. This was an absolute rout. This has been a series that had been so evenly played through the first two games. And we were talking with AJ Scholes on the show yesterday about just the slim margins through those first two. I mean, this was really the complete opposite. Panthers scored less than a minute into the game. That was Brad Marchand, you know, scored again late in the first period. All of a sudden it's 2-0. Oilers did get one from Corey Perry early in the second, but Florida answers back less than 2 minutes later. Lead is back up to 3-1. And really it felt like the rout was on after that.
Yeah, one of the fun things about doing these shows is immediately being proved very wrong, and that definitely happened to us with our little hockey segment yesterday. We were talking about how closely matched these two teams were, and it didn't take very long for that to look incorrect. And unlike the NBA Finals game the day before, this one didn't really hang out as sort of in touching distance the whole time. It was, as you said, over pretty much from early in the game. I mean, by the end of the third period, the game had just devolved into one long extended brawl. It felt like the Oilers would rather just take out their feelings that way than try to mount an unlikely comeback. So hopefully the rest of the series, we get a few more close games like we saw in games 1 and 2.
Yeah, you're right about that. And that's something you will not see in the NBA Finals either. It's like, all right, Pacers are down 40. They're just going to start fighting SGA and Jalen Williams. But, you know, one little silver lining, I guess, if you stuck through that game through the third period. You know, Stuart Skinner, the goalie for Edmonton, ended up being pulled after the fifth goal of the night, just kind of putting him out of his misery. I mean, this is uncommon, certainly for both sides to some degree. You know, the Oilers have been plagued by some slow starts throughout the playoffs, but this is not a team that routinely, you know, allows high goal totals on the other side. First time since game one of the Western Conference Finals that the Oilers have allowed more than 5 goals in a game. But it's the 11th time already this postseason, Eric, that the Panthers have scored at least 5 goals, 6 goals by 6 different players last night. And like you said, Edmonton ended up with 85 penalty minutes at the end of this one, the most in any Stanley Cup final game since 1986. So quickly looking ahead to game 4 on Thursday night, we get a couple of days to relax for the Oilers to reset here. Panthers, even heavier favorites on the money line than they were in game 3. The number's minus 148 right now in favor of Florida at the DK Sportsbook. Oilers plus 124. If you're looking at the series line, Panthers now minus 260 to repeat as Stanley Cup champions. Oilers plus 215. If you think they can crawl back into the series, Panthers in 6, plus 230. Panthers in 5, plus 250. Panthers in 7, plus 450. And Oilers in 7, sitting there still at 4-1. So I don't think we can completely count Edmonton out of this, Eric. I think it's easy to look at a result like this and say, oh man, maybe there is a bigger gap between these teams. I would be very surprised if we see another domination like this on Thursday night.
Yeah, one thing I was curious about is how often does this happen in the Stanley Cup Finals? One team beating another by 5 goals, and it's actually happened in 3 straight years. In 2022, the Avalanche beat the Lightning 7-0 in Game 2. The Lightning came back and won Game 3 in that one. In 2023, the Golden Knights beat the Panthers 7-2 in Game 2. The Panthers came back to win Game 3 in overtime, and then just last year, the Oilers kept the series alive with an 8-1 win in Game 4. They won the next two as well. So two of those three, the losing team has bounced back. That was not the case last year. So there's some history both ways. And the Oilers are going to need a bounce back probably to keep this a good series. One thing I'd be curious about, if you're looking to bet the Oilers, would you rather just take the Oilers at +215 or would you just bet on Connor McDavid to win the Conn Smythe? I mean, if the Oilers win, it's almost definitely going to be him. Looks like your odds there +250. You get a slightly better payout on the thing that seems all but guaranteed to happen if the Oilers do win it. So I think right now is probably one of the best times in the series to bet on Connor McDavid if you do happen to still have faith in those Oilers.
I think it's a good point. I mean, McDavid's still +250 to win the Conn Smythe. I mean, really the only other Oilers player who's within range would be Draisaitl at 12-1. I mean, Sam Bennett right now, the favorite to take home the Conn Smythe. He's +175, Marchand 5-1, Bobrovsky +450, and Barkov for Florida 30-1. I mean, I think part of the reason that Bennett's odds aren't a little bit shorter is you have a debate here still, right? I mean, there's three, maybe even four Florida Panthers who could have their say as far as the Conn Smythe goes. But McDavid +250, man, kind of a crazy number considering where this series sits. But, you know, we don't want to overreact, right? I mean, all of a sudden, if Edmonton comes out, wins game four on the road, it's 2-2, momentum's back their way as the series shifts. So we will see how that plays out. We'll have certainly more hockey talk coming your way later in the week, including a game four preview with our guy, Paul Bruno, on Thursday. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on. You deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. We're talking rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. You can get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and make sure you enter the code ROTO15, R-O-T-O-1-5. Put that code in at checkout, 15% off any RotoWire subscription. That's rotowire.com. Use that code ROTO15. All right, Eric, let's turn our attention to Major League Baseball. You'll have some best bets for tonight's slate coming later in the show, but a big night on Monday. You know, essentially right after our show ended, Eric, we got news that the top prospect in baseball, the number one prospect in our guy James Anderson's rankings over at rotowire.com, Roman Anthony, finally got the call from the Boston Red Sox, made his debut last night, ended up going 0-for-4, did take a walk, you know, had a big RBI late in the game that ended up pushing it, or helping push it, I should say, into extras. Also a pretty tough error earlier in the game, Eric. Just one of those moments. So it's kind of a welcome to the bigs situation for Roman Anthony.
Yeah, and you're going to see that with any rookie. And of course, there is downside with any rookie. We never know exactly how they're going to perform against the highest level of competition in their first go around. But on the whole, I think a pretty encouraging start for Anthony, despite the lack of a hit. His first at bat, he smoked a liner right up the middle, 111 miles per hour. I believe it was the fifth hardest hit ball of the day. Deflected off the pitcher, wound up in a ground out because, you know, that's baseball. Sometimes you got to go for the bloop single rather than the hard liner up the middle. But Roman Anthony, a very talented player, can do some of everything, has the ability to hit for power and average, run as well, play some pretty decent outfield defense. It's interesting to see he was pulled for a pinch hitter against a lefty reliever late in the game. I suppose if you're trying to win every single game and the Red Sox kind of need to, given where they are in the standings, maybe that makes sense. But also, if you want to instill confidence in your prime prospect who just got called up, you'd think you want to say, you know what, we trust you. You get all the big opportunities. That's why you're here. The Red Sox didn't do that, which was a little odd, but I'm still would have very high expectations for him going forward, at least in the near future.
Eric, it pains me to say this, but your best bet did come through last night, your G-Bank best bet. You were all over Chris Sale. You liked Atlanta to take care of business behind Sale against the Milwaukee Brewers. They did exactly that. Brewers got on the board first. It was 1-0 in the third. All Atlanta Braves after that. And Chris Sale with another fantastic outing, goes 7 strong, 5 hits, just 1 run allowed, 2 walks, 11 strikeouts for Chris Sale. That snapped a 7-game losing streak for the Atlanta Braves. Sale was excellent. Aaron Civale, not so much. Brewers bullpen, even worse. That this ended up being a nice, easy win for you.
Yeah, and it was right in line with what I thought. The Brewers are not good enough to stop Sale from going deep in the game if the Braves wanted him to, and they definitely needed him to, given the way the bullpen had been going, although they did get, I believe, a clean inning from Raisel Iglesias in the eighth after Sale left the game. So that's encouraging to see. And I think there's going to be a lot of important games for Atlanta these next couple weeks. They are right on that borderline, similar to the Orioles in the AL, teams that had pretty real expectations heading into the season, but have been well short of them. Baseball's a long season, and you can be pretty far out in May. You don't want to be pretty far out by the time it gets to July. So if Atlanta has a good second half of June here, suddenly they look interesting as a long shot bet to make the playoffs and go deep in it. But if they're just mediocre or worse for another couple of weeks, they're probably going to be selling.
Braves plus 310 right now at DraftKings to make the playoffs in a very competitive National League. One more thing I want to hit real quickly here, Eric. Bryce Miller out in Seattle heading to the IL, back to the IL, I should say, second time in a month, still dealing with inflammation, some bone spurs in that elbow. Logan Evans has been recalled. He's already made six starts this season, should be out there tonight against Arizona.
Yeah, and he has a good ERA, 2.83, but the ERA estimator's all over 4. He doesn't really strike anybody out. He's avoided the walks, but when you have just a 17% strikeout rate, not many pitchers have extended success there. It is a very nice pitcher's park in Seattle, so for fantasy purposes, sure, any pitcher who starts there is somewhat interesting, but the Seattle team dealing with multiple injuries to the rotation this year. Unexpectedly, the offense keeping them afloat, but they're going to need that rotation to get healthy to make a run.
You're right about that. Seattle right now trailing the Houston Astros by 3 games in the AL West. We're going to head to break. We're going to play a game of Rate That Prop. When we come back, we'll look at some baseball props for tonight, some NBA Finals props as well. We're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman here with you today. We're going to play one of our favorite games on this show. It's called Rate That Prop. So our producer, Michael Cohen, he comes up with a handful of props for us. We're taking a look at some Major League Baseball props for tonight's slate. We'll do the same for the NBA in a moment. And Eric, our job is to assign these props a rating. If you give it a 1, that means you're not betting it. It's a bad idea. 2, maybe. It's okay. 3, decent. Yeah, I'd probably play it. 4, yeah, you're probably locking that one in. It's a good prop. 5, you're running to the window to get that bet in. So curious to see where you come in on these. And we start with a strikeout prop for you, Eric. Rate That Prop. Max Fried, 6+ strikeouts tonight going up against the Kansas City Royals. This one plus 125.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because I think you could make points on both sides. So maybe you can guess where I'm going to end up with the rating there. Fried, not a particularly high strikeout rate guy, 24% this year. It's a little bit above league average, but he's not a big whiff guy. That's not his game. But he can go deep into games, and when we're talking about a strikeout prop, it's not a strikeout rate prop, right? It's a total strikeouts prop. So one way to hit that is to face a bunch of batters. You'll eventually get there. Fried has hit this over in 5 of his last 7 starts. Now, it's going to be tough to do it against the Royals. They make a lot of contact. They're the second-best team at avoiding strikeouts this year, 18.7%, although they do strike out a little bit more against lefties. They're only 9th best in the league there, 21.7%. So I think that adds up to a 3 on this one. I don't think I'd take it at even money, but if you're getting plus 125, you're saying it's a little less likely that he gets there, and I think that's correct. So I think this is pretty interesting. I think it's a 3.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll take a 3. We'll take a 3 there, Eric, and your first ever Rate This Prop. All right, we got another one for you on the pitching side of things. Rate This Prop. Mackenzie Gore, over 17.5 outs recorded tonight, going up against Griffin Canning and the NL East leading Mets. This one's minus 130.
Yeah, and I like this one. Mackenzie Gore has been incredible this year, a 2.87 ERA, and that's actually worse than a lot of the ERA estimators. A Sierra all the way down at 2.50 is second best among qualified starters. His 35% strikeout rate leads the league, and he's also improved his walk rate. He's had slightly below average command in previous years. This year, it's slightly better than average, 7% walk rate. And Gore was an elite prospect before struggling in his first couple MLB seasons. So it's not as if this is completely out of nowhere. He's hit this particular over in 10 of his 13 starts. Now, it's a tough task against the Mets. They do have a pretty good offense, but that is offset somewhat by a good pitcher's park here. The only thing that keeps this from a five for me is the minus 130 line. I do think Gore will do this, but at minus 130, I don't know if I'd go better than a four.
Okay, there we have it. Mackenzie Gore, by the way, 35-1 right now to win the National League Cy Young Award. Everybody, of course, chasing Paul Skeens, who is minus money, minus 180 right now at the DK Sportsbook. Let's move over to the hitting side of things, Eric. Rate that prop. Austin Riley, over 1.5 total bases tonight. This one's minus 125. Braves continue their series in Milwaukee, going up against Quinn Priester tonight. Austin Riley has hit this, Eric, in four of his last five.
Yeah, he's hit this in three straight and four in his last five, as you mentioned. Over the course of the full season, though, he's hit it 31 times in 65 games. That's a 48% rate, so slightly worse than a coin flip. And at minus 125, you'd need this to be slightly better than a coin flip, about 56%. So from that angle, it doesn't look great. But the reason I'm willing to give this at least a three is that he's going up against Quinn Priester, who does have a pretty decent ERA, to be fair, 3.88. But both FIP and Sierra think he's about three quarters of a run worse than that. They're at 4.58 there. He's just not been a particularly exciting pitcher at any stage of his career. Looks like a back-end starter type because he doesn't miss enough bats. A 15% strikeout rate this year and for his career. And hey, when we're looking at total bases, we don't just care about the overall quality of the opposing pitcher. We care about if he's going to allow you to get hits. And if you don't strike out many batters, you're going to give up a bunch of hits. Now, there is one thing that pushes against it here, though, in Priester's profile, and that is that he has a high walk rate at 11%. What if he just walks Austin Riley a couple times? That doesn't help you in these total bases props. So I think this one's a three. I think there's generally, it's hard for me to get extremely excited up to a level of a five for any hitter prop because hitters in a single game are just so volatile. I think something like the Mackenzie Gore one, it's easier to have the firm confidence in. Any hitter, you know, what four bad plate appearances is just not very noticeable in the grand scheme of things. So I think there's a lot of reasons to like this, but general volatility and worried about walks keep it to a three for me.
We mentioned the Braves, Eric, and their attempt at least to try to climb back into things in the National League. The 13.5 back right now in the division. I think we can kiss that one goodbye. Still 9 games out of the final wildcard spot in the National League. Is there enough talent? Is there enough upside on this roster where you would at least contemplate a Braves to make the playoffs at plus 310, or are we looking at a lost season?
I think that it's decent still right now, but like I said, I think we're one more slump away from them definitely giving up. I think we'll have more of a sign which direction they're going once we get to early July, but that means right now might be when the value is. The talent's certainly there, but we're going to need, say, Ronald Acuna to look even more like himself as he gets further away from his second torn ACL. We're going to need something more from Spencer Strider too. When your ace gets his second elbow surgery this early in his career and comes back looking not very ace-like, it's going to deal a big blow to your playoff chances. Still, I think the team's better than they've shown so far.
All right, let's shift over to the NBA, Erica. We got a couple NBA finals, series long props. We got one looking ahead to game three tomorrow night. So I'll kind of flip things over to you. What do we have for NBA?
Yeah, let's look at Isaiah Hartenstein to lead the NBA Finals in rebounds. He's at plus 140 on that one. What do you think?
I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 5. I think this is an interesting one to start with. A good poll by our guy, Michael Cohen. So, you know, of course, this factors in what's happened through the first two games. So there's a little bit of a sample to build on. There's also some forecasting involved. Hartenstein is tied with Pascal Siakam right now at 17 boards apiece. Those two lead the NBA Finals in rebounding. And Siakam, appropriately, is just behind Hartenstein in the odds, plus 145. Now, Hartenstein's 17 rebounds have come in 39 minutes. Siakam's 17 rebounds have come in 65 minutes. And if you watch these first two games, there's been some luck, I think, involved for Siakam. 8 of his 17 rebounds have come on the offensive glass. I can recall two instances late in game one where he had two offensive rebounds off of air balls. I think they were both block shots that just kind of landed in his arms. He had two offensive rebounds on the same possession, both on long 3-point rebounds in game two. yeah, credit to him for being in the right spot. I don't know how sustainable that's going to be. I don't think half his rebounds are going to be coming on the offensive side the rest of the way. I mean, his defensive rebounding rate way below where it's been throughout the playoffs. In terms of rebound percentage, Hardenstein's blowing him out of the water. You know, Siakam's overall rebound percentage, even with those offensive boards, sitting at 14% for the series, 24% total rebound percentage for Isaiah Hardenstein. This is going to come down to, will Hardenstein play enough minutes? And I think over the course of this series, he will. Again, I think Siakam probably slows down with some of those offensive boards. It's worth mentioning Aaron Nesmith. You know, he's just behind those two at 16 rebounds, but 12 of those came in game one when the Thunder missed a million open shots. And I think three Indiana Pacers had double digit rebounds. So despite being right there, you know, he's 20-1 for a reason, maybe worth the sprinkle. You know, keep in mind heading into the finals, Nesmith was just three rebounds behind Siakam for the team lead through the first three rounds of the playoffs. We also have to mention Chet Holmgren, six boards in game one, six boards in game two. He, of course, has the minutes advantage over Hardenstein, but certainly not the same level of a per minute, per possession rebounder. Did lead OKC in total rebounds, though, through the first three rounds. He's currently trailing Hardenstein by three boards. You know, he hasn't had more than seven in a game so far since the Denver series, excuse me. So plus 225 for Chet Holmgren, not really enough value for me considering he's already at a deficit. So I don't mind this. I don't mind getting this on Hardenstein at plus money. We'll give it a 4 out of 5.
Let's take a look at another player who's currently leading the finals in a stat category and figure out whether or not he will do so at the end of the series. Aaron Nesmith, who you just mentioned, is leading the finals or tied for the lead in made threes. He's plus 135 to end the finals as the leader in made threes. Do you think he'll do it?
I think he will. I'm not that confident, however, so I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5. I think it's appropriately priced with two games under our belt. Leads all players in attempts with 15 and makes with 7, but Lu Dort is right behind. He has 6 makes. Obi Toppin has 6 makes. Halliburton, Caruso, Aaron Wiggins all have 5. I think Dort is a threat here. I don't mind him at plus 180. You know, he leads OKC in three-point attempts by a good margin in these playoffs. The rest of those guys I just named, though, they're all role players who can get hot but probably won't sustain that game to game. I think you also have to look at Halliburton at plus 210. You have to think he's going to be a little more aggressive as this series goes on, especially at home. Pacers are the higher three-point volume team between these two. It's going to be imperative, I think, for the Pacers to win the three-point battle if they have any hope to hang around in this series. So fine with Nesmith at plus 135. Would think about Halliburton as well at plus 210. We're going to talk some fantasy football when we come back. Our guy Joe Bartle from RotoWire, he's going to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. Talk some rookie running backs, talk some Aaron Rodgers. It's coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolling along here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you. And we're thrilled to bring on our one and only guest today, one of our good pals over at rotowire.com, fantasy football expert Joe Bartle, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at JB Fantasy Sports. Joe, welcome back. Plenty to unpack in terms of NFL news over these last few days. We'll get your thoughts on some rookie running back rankings as it pertains to fantasy football. But I want to start with the Pittsburgh Steelers, your guy, or at least your former guy, Aaron Rodgers, signing on with the Pittsburgh Steelers over the weekend. His new wide receiver one, and really the only notable wide receiver on this team, DK Metcalf. I know you have been a big DK Metcalf drafter already in your best balls. What do you make of this landing spot for Aaron Rodgers, and perhaps more importantly for fantasy, what does this mean for DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I anticipated for, it feels like months now, that Aaron Rodgers would be the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the news last week that he officially signed didn't really change the outcome for me. I didn't really see the ADP change for Aaron Rodgers in particular from a best ball perspective either. I think most of the betting market, certainly most of the best ball and fantasy market, was assuming this was going to be the scenario. It just was a matter of when it was going to occur. I think the bigger deal is what it does to the secondary pass catchers for the Steelers. And you mentioned DK Metcalf. I may have a slip out there right now on the over on 925 total receiving yards for Metcalf this season. That's now bumped up to 950.5 on DraftKings right now at minus 110. I think this is a absolute slam dunk. Metcalf has hit that mark each of the past 5 years for the Seahawks. That was when they had Tyler Lockett as probably the primary receiver. And of course, JSN last year, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Now he's entering Pittsburgh with a quarterback situation that I think is favorable to Geno Smith during his tenure with the Seahawks. And I also think there is zero other pieces outside of DK Metcalf that can accumulate the sort of volume that I think will stop DK Metcalf from hitting that mark. 950 over on the receiving yards right now, minus 110 on DraftKings. It feels like an absolute lock. And from a fantasy perspective, right now you're seeing DK Metcalf go about the fourth or fifth round range in redraft leagues in best ball. That's near Devonta Smith. That's near Xavier Worthy. That's near Jameson Williams. All those guys have at least another receiver, if not more. They're sharing the targets, the volume with in that passing game. Otherwise, you're also seeing Zay Flowers, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy in that same spot as DK Metcalf. And all those have concerns about their offensive scheme and system. Say what you want about Aaron Rodgers. Say what you want about Arthur Smith. I've said a lot about both. But that's going to be a situation that is prominent and successful for DK Metcalf. I think Metcalf needs to be going at least a round ahead of those, well, at least a round ahead of his ADP currently and ahead of a lot of those guys. Like if you talk about best ball ahead of Xavier Worthy, fine. I get the upset scenario for Xavier Worthy. We saw it in the Super Bowl. Devonta Smith, though, I mean, he's going to split time with AJ Brown. So as long as both are healthy, Metcalf has zero other competition. And even if the Steelers were to trade for Romeo Doubs or if they were to acquire Alan Lazard, that doesn't change the outcome at all. Metcalf is the number one target for a quarterback that likes to pass the ball and has a really good deep ball in the case of Aaron Rodgers still yet in his career. So I think DK Metcalf is a complete steal at his ADP and also at 950 over on the receiving yards. I think that's a slam dunk too.
Another recent big signing, or should I say another recent signing, you can tell me how big this one is, Nick Chubb signed with the Texans. I'm curious how that affects him, the rest of the Texans offense, and particularly Joe Mixon. Looks like he was the 16th running back off the board in the month of June at the NFFC. What does this do to Mixon? What does this mean for Nick Chubb's fantasy value as well? Is this a good landing spot for him, or would you have preferred that he landed elsewhere?
Let's start first with Nick Chubb, because that's an easier question. At least as of the last week and probably the weeks prior, Nick Chubb was right outside from a best ball perspective of being draft range. You think underdog best balls, it's typically an 18-round draft. Nick Chubb was at 18th round, a little bit afterwards. You maybe go a little bit higher if you wanted to. Wasn't much of a difference in that spot. I don't think Nick Chubb signing with the Texans changes that all that much if he's more of a round 14 or 15 guy. That makes sense. Think like Tyler Allgeier and Bijan Robinson. Years past, there was the Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison handcuff backup scenario. I think it's to a lesser extent that. The Nick Chubb signing to me far more impacts the value of Joe Mixon. And I always get the heebie-jeebies when a team doesn't want to directly say what the what the injury might be. So in this case, Joe Mixon has been dealing with a lower body injury. Now, the team doesn't have to say anything about that right now. You don't have any injury reports that are forced upon a team when the regular season starts. So you can get by with saying, yeah, whatever. We saw Joe Mixon with sporting a brace during like the non-mandatory OTAs and things like that. We've seen Joe Mixon around the Texans campus also having something to do with, I think, an ankle injury. And that's concerning to me because Mixon fell off in the second half of the season after suffering his second ankle injury of the year. After that second ankle injury, week 15, he had 129 total rushing yards over the final 4 weeks of the season. If the Texans are signing Nick Chubb because they're concerned about Joe Mixon, that absolutely has to impact his fantasy value. And right now, he's going incredibly high. Think about like late fourth-ish range. Chuba Hubbard's in that same spot. Kenneth Walker, Alvin Kamara, Omarion Hampton. Over the past month in NFFC drafts, all those running backs are going after Joe Mixon, who has this lower body injury, whatever that might mean. If the Texans are simply signing Nick Chubb because they want some more depth, want to make sure they protect themselves offensively, schematically, in the event Joe Mixon gets an injury at some point during the season, that makes complete sense. That's what smart teams do, and Nick Chubb was relatively free. He was one year, $2.5 million, something to that effect from a deal. But I think there's more to it than that. And if that is the case, if Mixon actually is dealing with a consequential ankle injury the third time in the past 18 months, then we should be talking about Mixon not past Alvin Kamara, Kenneth Walker, Omarion Hampton, but even further. Let's just say even two rounds further, ADP-wise, RJ Harvey, Caleb Johnson, David Montgomery, James Conner. I'm taking all of those running backs over Joe Mixon too. I think that's where this lies. It's not so much Nick Chubb's value. It would have been great if he went to the Bears or the Cowboys where he could compete for a starting role. But if the Texans are signing this level name brand of veteran, it isn't so much they like Nick Chubb as a backup. It's that they have concerns about Joe Mixon moving forward.
We'll talk some more running backs in a moment with our guy, Joe Bartle. But first, you want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and you get a full year for just $199. Plus, you'll get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up right now and you'll get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from VSiN hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide, which drops on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to vsin.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Use that promo code BOOK. Joe Bartle, one of our NFL experts from rotowire.com, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Joe, I want to talk some rookie running backs. Obviously, we know about Ashton Jeanty. He's going off the board as the RB4 right now. You'll often see him towards the end of the first round. But there's a gap. And once you get beyond that, we got Omarion Hampton, RJ Harvey, Travion Henderson, Caleb Johnson, Quinshon Judkins. Yeah, Hampton tends to be the first of that group to go off the board, but I'm curious to get your opinion on how you rank these rookie running backs, all of which are going to have a say in this fantasy football season.
Yeah, and I'm not going to argue Ashton Jeanty in particular. You have to assume that given the draft capital invested from the Raiders' perspective, the Pete Carroll aspect, even I think Chip Kelly, offensive coordinator, we know what he wants to do with running backs. If people want to take Jeanty 6 overall, that might be a little bit high for me, but I completely get it. Back into the first round, early second round, I think conventionally that's where he's going to land come mid and end of August redraft. So I'm fine with that. It really is the other guys afterwards. You think about Omarion Hampton right now in NFFC drafts over the past month, being conventionally drafted around pick 50, normally like the fourth or fifth round spot. You'll see RJ Harvey at pick 56, and then Travion Henderson at pick 61. You look at that graphic there, talking about my rookie running back tiers, Travion Henderson is the one that's out of this equation. That's to say, I have him a lot further down out of this group, and I like Travion Henderson the same way I do Quinshon Judkins, Caleb Johnson, which is to say, hey, here's running back 6 from a rookie running back class that we have 6 rookies of consequential value will be drafted all by the end of round 7, if not sooner. That's a tremendous rookie class. But the value isn't in just all of these guys, but particularly trying to capitalize on where they fall right now. And I think this will change, certainly when we get the training camp hype videos for all these rookie running backs and as more conversation happens. But right now, as of June 6th, we are not addressing RJ Harvey's value enough, and neither are we doing for Quinshon Judkins or Caleb Johnson. I think RJ Harvey clearly is going to be Sean Payton's guy. We know that Sean Payton has made valuable running backs, not just Alvin Kamara, but the Reggie Bush eras as well, too, the Pierre Thomas era as well. Like, there's a lot of these other running backs that become fantasy factors. RJ Harvey at pick 56, I think, is a value. And Caleb Johnson and Quinshon Judkins, both just at least at minimum, 2 down backs for offenses that want to use those guys in that way. I really think that both Quinshon Judkins and Caleb Johnson at a really good spot fantasy value right now.
Joe, excellent stuff, man. Really appreciate you giving us some of your time. You and I will be recording an episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast later today. You can check that out on our YouTube channel. You can check it out wherever you get your podcasts. I know you have a bunch of best ball content coming, a lot of redraft content as well. You can check all of that out over at rotowire.com. Just head on over to our football page. Make sure you give Joe a follow on Twitter at JB Fantasy Sports. We got a full Major League Baseball slate to unpack when we come back. Eric Halterman's best bets in Major League Baseball coming up next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman here with you, taking you up to the top of the hour, as we do every Monday through Friday. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on the network. He's going to have Greg Peterson from VSiN on the show, talking some best bets for Major League Baseball. We're going to do the same, Eric, rounding out the show with some of your favorite plays for a full Tuesday slate. Once again, no day games today, so we get to break down any games that you want. And I know you want to start in the NL West. Dodgers, Padres, still some indecision on the part of the Dodgers as far as who's going to start this game. We know Dylan Cease will be out there for the Padres. I know you're looking at a total play here. You're looking at the money line as well. So take it away. What do you like?
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky because we don't actually know who will be on the mound for the Dodgers. It looks like Matt Sauer will be called up to pitch in the game at some point. We'll probably go multiple innings, either as a starter or some sort of bulk guy, but it really could be more of a full-on bullpen day. I know Bobby Miller would be on turn in the minors, but there's been no indication he's coming up, and that wouldn't make me any less interested in an over. And I think it's the over that I'm more interested in here. The Padres should be able to score on the bullpen day or whoever it is of the Dodgers. We could also just take the Padres money line. A little nervous about that with Dylan Cease, the way he's been pitching this year and lately. He's one of those guys where the ERA estimators like him way more than his ERA, a 4.72 ERA, but FIP, XFIP, Sierra, they're all around 3.20 to 3.25. That says he's been quite a good pitcher, but it's just hard to have faith in him. He's allowed 3 runs in 5 or few innings in each of his last 3 starts. He's just not pitching right, great right now. So I don't know if I really want to back the Padres, even though I think from a logical perspective, I think it does make a lot of sense.
All right, let's take a look at the Yankees and the Royals in the American League. We got Max Fried, second in the odds right now for the American League Cy Young. I believe he's 7 or 8 to 1, depending on where you look. Of course, behind Tarik Skubal. He's having a fantastic year going up against Noah Cameron, Eric, who will take at least one more turn in the rotation. Royals working with a 6-man rotation for now, at least. I was talking about this game with our guy, Paul Spohr, who we've had on this show. We have him on our SXM show every week. And I was telling him, look, I need a big outing from Noah Cameron for my fantasy interest. And his exact quote, Eric, was, this matchup screams regression for Noah Cameron. Do you agree?
Yeah, I could definitely see where Paul's coming from on that one. Noah Cameron has had a very weird start to his career. The results have been incredible. 3 earned runs in 5 starts. He's got an 0.85 ERA, an 0.79 whip, but he's not striking out at just a 16% strikeout rate, and he's actually hit this under 3.5 strikeouts in 4 of his 5 starts so far. He's not making up for it with a strong walk rate. He's about league average there, 8%, and his ground ball rate's a little bit below average too. I don't trust a pitcher who misses this few bats to succeed unless he's really avoiding the walks or really keeping the ball on the ground, and he's not doing that. That's why the ERA estimators are bad for Noah Cameron, 4.59 xFIP, 4.84 on the Sierra. That doesn't just say he's a mid-rotation starter. That says he's barely a number 5. So there's 2 ways the under on his 3.5 strikeouts hits. One is he keeps doing the same thing, escaping jam after jam without, or not even actually getting into jams, but escaping, you know, with all the batted balls, finding his fielder's gloves and escaping with another long start where he doesn't strike out more than 3 batters. We've seen he can do it, but I think the more likely way this hits is that his good luck catches up to him. He's had a 1.48 BABIP so far. That could all come back to haunt him in this game, and he gets knocked out early before he gets the chance to rack up that 4th strikeout. So I think with those 2 opposite paths leading to the same conclusion, I think one of those hitting is more likely than him suddenly becoming a normal good pitcher who goes 6 innings with 6 strikeouts.
Chicago Cubs are on the road at the Phillies tonight. Colin Ray going up against Mick Abel. I know you're looking at the total here, Eric, and you have a derivative on Abel as well.
Yeah, I think you could go one of 2 ways on this one, depending on whether you trust Mick Abel, who was an exciting prospect back when he was drafted in 2020 and then really struggled with his command for several years in the minors before improving it this year. Through his first 2 major league starts, he hasn't walked a single batter. He struck out 11 in 11 and a third innings and has allowed just a single run. So if you buy Mick Abel, I think taking the under on 9.5, which is a pretty high total, makes a lot of sense. The Cubs have a good lineup, but if you're trusting Abel to shut them down, then you go to the other side, and Colin Ray has been fine for the Cubs, maybe surprisingly fine, but a 3.59 ERA on the year. The Phillies lineup has been middle of the pack. They're 12th by WRC+, and they're without Bryce Harper right now. So I think if you trust Abel, go with the under here. If you don't trust Abel, I would look at him to suddenly start walking batters again. You can get plus 200 on him to walk 3 or more batters, which is the kind of thing he's done all the time throughout his professional career. So I'd look in one of two directions, depending on how much you trust his two starts in the majors so far to be representative of who he is.
Sticking in the National League, another big series going on between the Nationals and the NL East leading Mets. Mackenzie Gore going up against Griffin Canning. Maybe the best pitching matchup on the slate tonight, Eric. What can you really say about Mackenzie Gore? He's been one of the best pitchers in the National League, one of the best pitchers in baseball. I know the numbers look really good for Griffin Canning. Any concerns with him when you get under the hood?
Yeah, there are many more concerns with Canning than with Gore, which is why I'd be interested in the Nationals' money line here, at least plus 128 here. You might even be able to get it higher at some other places. Gore's been incredible this year, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking about one of his props, a 287 ERA, and that doesn't even describe how good he's been. According to the ERA estimators, they're around 250, second-best Sierra among qualified starters. 35% strikeout rate is incredible, and this is, again, a guy who was supposed to be very good before he debuted. The fact that he struggled a couple years but is good again, I don't think this is out of nowhere. I'm buying in on Mackenzie Gore. Now, Griffin Canning, he's also someone who is pitching much better after several years where he didn't look very good. I think getting away from the Angels organization is going to help a lot of players. The Mets seemingly much better at developing pitchers, but 290 ERA for Canning does not match his ERA estimators. For example, his Sierra is just over 4. Strikes out a slightly above average amount of batters, but just 23%, nothing special there. 51% ground ball rate is good. That'll limit the damage, but he's walking too many guys. A walk rate over 10%. He also has 2 bad starts in his last 3, although he did bounce back last time out against the Dodgers. On the whole, though, even though the Mets have a much better lineup, I'm really liking everything I'm seeing from Mackenzie Gore this year. And if you can get him for this kind of plus money, I dig that in most matchups.
All right, let's hit one more game. We got the Rays and the Red Sox in Boston. Wild game last night. Rays end up winning in extras. Tonight we get Ryan Pepiot going up against Lucas Giolito. Talk some Roman Anthony at the top of the show, Eric. Anything you like for him?
Yeah, I think there's a couple we could go with here. I like Roman Anthony to get 2 or more total bases at plus 125. You could also look at Anthony to get his first big league hit, although minus 195 there, not particularly good odds. A Rays starter, Ryan Pepiot, has allowed plenty of contact this season, a 21% strikeout rate. And as I mentioned earlier, if we're looking at hit props or total bases props, we want pitchers who let the opposing hitters put it in play. Anthony should be able to do that. He'll get the platoon advantage against Pepiot as well. And again, he did have one very hard hit ball yesterday, the 5th hardest ball hit all day. Just got unlucky to not grab a hit. Anthony is going to have good numbers before too long. And I think him putting up a good day today makes a lot of sense. He was hitting 288 with a 913 OPS before his call-up. I don't think we're going to have to wait long for him to get that first hit, that first 2 total bases game. I think that could come up tonight.
It's time for our GBank Best Bets of the Night, brought to you, of course, by GBank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet in VSIN. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and Visa completes the trifecta with a free Visa Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and Visa. Head over to VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Eric, you're 1-for-1 career in your GBank Best Bets. Where are we going tonight?
Yeah, let's try to keep up the perfect record. Let's go back to that Noah Cameron under 3.5 strikeouts. You're not often going to get a strikeout prop this low. But again, there's 2 ways this hits. One is he keeps doing the same thing. He's already hit it in 4 of his 5 starts. And the other is that all the luck catches up to him and he gets knocked out early before he gets the chance to strike out 4 batters. I couldn't tell you which one of those it's going to be, but with 2 paths to it, I like this bet at plus 130.
All right, I'm jumping on the Thunder. Give me OKC to cover the 5.5 in Game 3 tomorrow night. We'll have a preview coming your way on tomorrow's show. That's going to do it for us here on Prop Point. Stick around. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.